and welcome to Who Goes There, the biographical game where it doesn't matter whether people have been famous for 15 minutes or 15 centuries. If they've made it big, they've made it here. My name is Martin Young, and joining Team Captain Francis Wheen this week is Amanda Foreman. And joining Fred Housego, we have Maria McCurlin. If you're all ready, we can move on to round one, which is our archive round. You must identify some famous people from these recordings, but be warned, they may not be talking about a subject that has anything to do with them. Francis, who is putting the wind up people in this clip?
I have to say this. A lot of entertainers have had situations where they were confronted with humiliating things. I haven't had too many of them. Most people seem to be so scared of me that I don't have to go through that. And I'm glad. You hear? I'm glad.
Was it a young Cassius Clay?
I don't think she would be too...
Well, I was actually... I couldn't even tell the gender, to be honest, because it was either a woman with quite a deep voice or a man with a slightly higher voice. Billie Holiday? I give up.
Any ideas? Yes, Maria.
Was it Nina Simone?
Yes, it was. A bonus one. It was the jazz singer Nina Simone. She was originally called Eunice Wayman. Amanda, who is reminiscing on his early ambitions in this clip?
The one thing I never wanted to be was to be a writer. And the reason was that I was a born writer. The thing was as natural to me as the taste of water in my mouth. It has no taste because it's always there. At least it's always in my mouth because I'm a teetotaler.
Gosh, a teetotaler and a writer must be the first. Amanda, any ideas?
Could it be Shavian?
Yes!
Bernard Shaw, yeah.
George Bernard Shaw, definitely. You recognise the voice, or...?
No, in fact, he was teetotal.
Ah, very good. It was indeed George Bernard Shaw, playwright, novelist, and all-round wit. For a bonus point, though, can you tell me who is on the receiving end of this Shavian caustic quote? There is no eminent writer whom I can despise so entirely as I despise him when I measure my mind against his. It would positively be a relief for me to dig him up and throw stones at him.
Shakespeare. But,
yes, exactly. A bonus point there to Francis. Maria, who is finding true love here?
I met him when I was speaking as a delegate at my very first Labour Party conference. I got to the rostrum, made a bit of a stir, and he was a journalist, he was an editor at the time, and put me on the front page of his newspaper. So, of course, I married him.
Maria.
That was the wonderful Barbara Castle.
It certainly was. Correct in one. Any more you want to tell me about the lovely Barbara Castle?
Was it her husband Frank?
Ted.
Ted. Swatty.
Yes, she was the former Labour Transport Minister and old Labour stalwart, if you can remember the days when those people still existed.
And she never had a driving licence.
Now, I didn't know that.
Someone pulled her up about it, and she said, well, I don't have to be a doctor, be a Minister of Health. I think it might help, though, if you're going to start messing around with the traffic, you know what a steering wheel looks like.
Fred, it's your turn now. Who is admitting to being a bit of a klutz here?
It doesn't seem wild to me. I'm just clumsy, you know. I mean, things get broken and things fall into swimming pools, and it's just I'm a lousy driver. And I'm very clumsy. I mean, that's about it.
The only thing I'm picking up on swimming pools and cars was Keith Moon.
You're right. Yeah. Ah. And tell me, Fred, who was Keith Moon?
Drummer with The Who, the only one sadly to die. And, of course, there's rumours been going around ever since about how he died, etc. and so forth. But that was the classic when someone turned up and he said he wanted the Rolls-Royce service and it was in the swimming pool.
Right. And their bassist, John Entwistle, wasn't much better. He accidentally ruined three guitars during the recording of the single My Generation Alone. Our next round is called Claim to Fame, and it deals with people who might not be household names, but who found fame, however fleeting it might have been. Our panellists need merely to tell me who they were or why they've secured their place in history. Francis, how did Malcolm Nash find fame after being hit for six?
Well, Malcolm Nash was a bowler for Glamorgan back in the 1960s and 70s, and During one famous match, the West Indian touring side was playing Glamorgan, and Gary Sobers scored a six off every ball of the over. The only time it's ever been done in first-class cricket, I think.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's absolutely right. Very good. Amanda, how did Charlotte Corday find fame at bath time?
She was French.
She was French.
And she murdered Marat.
She did indeed.
Yeah, with a knife.
reckon that's enough?
Well, French Revolution, she killed him because she was against his principles, and she was his ex-lover as well.
Ooh.
They had an affair as well, you know, and then she killed him.
Oh, that's he definitely
didn't measure
worth
up, clearly. And she inspired that wonderful portrait by David. Do you remember?
Oh, that's very good. Mm. Yeah. Yes, indeed. It says here, the subsequent painting of the incident by Jacques-Louis David is the only documentary evidence of a Frenchman taking a bath. I apologize for that. I know some quite nice Frenchmen, but not anymore. Maria, can you tell me the claim to fame of the Austrian customs official, Alois Schickelgruber?
Yes, he was the father of a very bad man.
He was?
He was the father of Adolf.
Very good. He was the father of Adolf Hitler. He was born, of course, Schickelgruber, which is, I'm sure, what gave you it. Alois changed his name to Hitler in middle age. The move may well have changed the world. I mean, think about it. How far would his son have got trying to convince people to say, Heil Schickelgruber? Fred, why did Bertha Suttner find her claim to fame particularly rewarding?
Not a clue.
She was a leading 19th century pacifist.
Oh, did she win like a peace prize or something?
Yes! Oh. Definitely a point there. Well done.
Nobel Peace Prize.
Now, which particular peace prize?
The first of the Nobel Peace Prizes, was it?
That's correct. Oh. She was, as I said, a leading 19th century pacifist, and she convinced Alfred Nobel to make provision for the endowment of a peace prize in his will. And the reason we said that she found it rewarding was because the irony was, having had the idea for it, she won it herself in 1905. And at the end of that round, Francis and Amanda have 9 points, and I'm afraid Fred and Maria only have 7.
What?
Well done, both of you. This round has the genteel title, You Talking About Me? Our panellists will be confronted by descriptions of the famous by other famous people. All you have to do is tell me who you think is being talked about. Francis, who is getting this glowing character reference from the American ballerina Cynthia Harvey? He's the most loyal, sensitive and generous man I've ever met. It's a footballer.
Loyal and sensitive and kind.
That's it.
Well, I don't know. Yeah,
Vinnie Jones.
It is Vinnie Jones.
Did you say that?
Yeah, stage whisper.
Yeah.
Fred's stage whisper, must be blooming Vinnie Jones, was heard by the other side. So I think we'll split the point there. Very good. It was the former Wimbledon defender and lock, stock and two smoking barrel star Vinnie Jones. He was famed for literally getting to grips with Paul Gascoigne and for biting the nose of a journalist. Well, there's nothing wrong with that, is there? Amanda, of whom was Lytton Strachey speaking when he said this? Her conception of God was certainly not orthodox. She felt towards him as she might have felt towards a glorified sanitary engineer. And in some of her speculations, she seems hardly to distinguish between the deity and the drains.
Oh, well, he always had a very hard spot for Florence Nightingale, so I presume it's her.
It is. Yeah. Very good. It was Florence Nightingale who revolutionised nursing during the Crimean War when she arrived with 38 nurses in Scutari in 1854. Her fixation with cleanliness did serve her patients well, however, as the mortality rate at the hospital fell drastically as soon as she was at work. Now, the first quote to our panellist Maria. That guy is built like granite. No one will underestimate him again. Who was the legendary cinema tough guy that Lee Marvin was talking about when he said that? It's really surprising. Lee Marvin won a Purple Heart, you know, for bravery. Mm. And the guy he was talking about might have been tough, but he was a saint.
Roger Moore.
Yes! One for my heavy clue.
Yes, very good.
It is, it's Roger Moore. Listen to it again. this guy has built like granite. Lee Marvin made the remark after Moore decked him during a fracas on the set of the film Shout at the Devil. Roger Moore has always been very modest about his talents, and why not? He once said this about himself: my acting range, left eyebrow raised, right eyebrow raised. Fred, to whom was the American film producer Stanley Kramer referring when he said this? Because she looks the way she does, everyone assumes that she's sophisticated, intelligent, and mature. In fact, she's none of those things. She's a simple farm girl and has the mind and mentality of a simple farm girl. Once voted the most beautiful woman in the world, and not Liz Taylor.
Ava Gardner?
Yes. Definitely a bonus point. It was the actress Ava Gardner who went from being a farm girl in North Carolina to being voted the most beautiful woman in the world. For a bonus point, can you tell us what links Frank Sinatra, Mickey Rooney, and Artie Shaw?
They all married, didn't they?
That's not a bonus point. That's everybody shouting at once.
Yes.
They were all married to Ava Gardner. I like this quote. The diminutive Mickey Rooney once described her as a woman of strong passions, one of them rage. They were only married a year. I wonder why. Our next round is called AKA, and it's all about pseudonyms. Whether they're nicknames, pen names, or even original names of some famous personalities, our panelists must work out the names under which those people found fame and fortune. Francis, under what name did Konstantin Sergeyevich Alexeyev become famous for acting up? Konstantin Sergeyevich Alexeyev.
A Russian silence descends.
Well, there was method in his madness.
All right, Stanislavski.
Correct. Very good. It is the Russian actor, theatre director and teacher Stanislavski who developed the method style of acting. Method acting, of course, relies on improvisation, spontaneity, psychological realism. So I won't go on about that, teams. I mean, you're doing all right as you are. Amanda, under what title did Little Miss Moffitt tough it out to prove that she was ace?
Oh, like tennis?
Yes.
That kind of ace?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Little Miss Moffitt. Stop it.
Will you two stop squabbling?
Okay, Billie Jean King.
That's correct.
I think you're too.
It is, you're quite right, the two of you. Billie Jean King, one of the most successful women in the history of tennis. She won 20 Wimbledon titles, including 5 singles titles. Maria, if Sally Owen gave a concert, whose name would you see on the bill? Sally Owen.
Hello.
We've got an idea. Petula Clark.
Yes!
Yay!
Close this here, I think, for that. If you think that was hard, wait till the next bonus question. It is the British songstress Petula Clark, whose hits include Downtown and My Love. She started her career as a child singer, entertaining the troops in the Second World War. But this is the bonus point. Can you tell me the name of her 1943 radio series? Maybe recorded in this beautiful radio theatre, we do not know.
Pet's Party or something? Oh.
Well, that's worth half a point. It was Pet's Parlour. Fred, who in 1972 changed his name so that it literally means the all-powerful warrior who, because of his endurance and inflexible will to win, will go from conquest to conquest, leaving fire in his wake?
William Hague. He was always precocious. Yes. There's only one I can think of. Is that Idi Amin? He was the one who someone once did a close-up on his medals and found he was wearing a CDM, Cadbury's Dairy Milk. Then the other one, I suppose, would be Gaddafi.
You're doing well on the old tyrants.
Then there's Bokassa, who's another one. Used to be Giscard d'Estaing's jeweller. Kim Il-sung?
No, I think I'm going to have to tell you this. It was Joseph Désiré Mobutu, the former dictator of Zaire. Now, do you want me to attempt the full name?
Yes.
That's, I enjoyed the title. Okay. It's Mobutu Sese Soko Kuku Ngubengi Wazabanga. Our next round is entitled Curriculum Vitae. We've collated some of the less well-known incidents from the lives of some famous people and put them together in a CV. All our panelists have to do is identify the person from the description. I'll read each of you four facts, and the sooner you answer, the more points you get. Francis, our first person was born in Rostock in 1742, and by the age of 16 had gained a commission in the Swedish army before being captured by the Prussian colonel von Belling. He loved the army, but he also loved gambling and high living, and eventually resigned his commission before he could be discharged for insubordination. He spent 15 years farming his estates and was only able to re-enter the Prussian army in 1786, but he quickly rose through the ranks and gained respect for his bravery. He became known...
With a tiny bit of assistance here, old Blücher.
It is very good. It was Field Marshal Gebhard Leberecht von Blücher. His bravery was legendary, exemplified at the Battle of Lützen, where he first had a horse shot from under him, then he got shot himself, but he still stayed on the battlefield for 11 hours. Amanda, this gentleman was born in 1697 in Smithfield, London, the son of a teacher. He was apprenticed to a goldsmith and began engraving in 1720. Although he had...
Oh, Hogarth!
Yes! Very good! It was William Hogarth, whose works were so popular that engravings of them were often pirated, and it was through his pressure that a Copyright Act of 1735 was passed. Maria, she was born Isabella Mason, M-A-Y-S-O-N, in 1836, and although English, she was educated in Heidelberg. She became an excellent pianist, but instead of continuing a career in music, she married at the age of 20. As a young wife and mother, she discovered the difficulties of running a household and used the fact that her husband was a publisher to create a new career for herself.
Mrs. Beaton
is correct. You just pipped the other side. Very good. The next line was, her book of household management became a classic. So you got in before that. Well done. Her book was a true achievement since there were no such handbooks at the time, and she said of it, I must frankly own that had I known beforehand that this book would have cost me the labor it has, I should never have been courageous enough to commence it. Finally, Fred, can you work out whose CV this is? Born in Frankfurt am Main in 1749, he was the son of a lawyer and was pushed towards the law himself. Although he didn't want to study it, and after a long period of bad health, he finally qualified as a lawyer, but despite that, he became a newspaper critic. Then in 1776, he took on the post of court official and privy councillor to the Duke of Weimar, and even took part in a geological survey for his new master.
Geology.
He was also interested in anatomy. And in 1784, he discovered the intermaxillary bone, which is part of the face. His true fame comes from his fictional writing, and his greatest work was published in two parts.
Goethe.
We'll do one each there. What was the great fictional work?
Oh, Faustus, is it?
It was, Dr. Faustus. Faustus, yeah. The end of that round, Francis and Amanda have 24 points, and Fred and Maria have... 13. So you've got rather a lot to do before the end of this. Now we have a musical round to divert you. We shall play you extracts from the works of various artists, and all you need to do is identify the subject of the piece or the person to whom it's dedicated. Francis, can you identify this piece of music and tell me to whom it was dedicated? Think Austrian prince.
Well, as in the artist formerly known as Austrian prince.
Yes, the one, yes. Shall I tell you the piece of music was the Archduke Trio by Ludwig van Beethoven.
It was the Archduke Ferdinand, almost certainly.
No. Well, think reindeer then.
Rudolf, all right.
Archduke Rudolf of Austria, who was Beethoven's pupil. That's what the Archduke Trio was written about. Amanda, please, if you will, listen to this.
Was ABBA?
Yes, that's correct.
They dedicated it to someone, did they?
Right, no, it was the number one hit, and like all their hits, it was co-written by Björn Ulvaeus and Benny Andersson. But what we want to know is who was the third man involved in the writing of that song?
The third man? Björn Andersson?
No. It is an Andersson, though. It's difficult, this.
Steve Andersson?
No. It was Stig Andersson, the manager of ABBA. Okay, your turn, Maria. Please have a listen to this.
Here's to Cisco and Sonny and Lead Belly too. And to all the good people that traveled with you. Here's to the hearts and the hands of the men that come with the dust and the dawn with the wind.
I'm sure I don't have to tell you that was Bob Dylan singing on his first album. But who was the subject of that song?
I think it's Woody Guthrie, isn't it? Because you got Cisco Houston in there, Sonny Terry, who was part of the partnership with Sonny Terry and Brownie McGee, and there was one other name, oh, Leadbelly, Huddy Leadbetter.
A round of applause, he's absolutely right. Fred, it's your turn now. Well done, that was a very good answer. Listen to this.
Escaping through the lily fields, I came across an empty space. It trembled and exploded, like the bus stop in its place. The bus come by and I got home, that's when it all began. There was Cal O'Neill at the wheel of bus to Neverland.
That was hippie legends The Grateful Dead playing their 1968 album Anthem of the Sun. The question is, who was Cowboy Neil at the wheel of a bus to Never Everland?
Is this Neil Young?
Nope.
It's not Cowboy Neil. No, can't place it.
Neil Cassidy.
Yes, bonus point there, well done. And can you tell me any more about the said Neil Cassidy?
Well, he was one of that gang, wasn't he, with Allen Ginsberg and Jack Kerouac and the rest of them.
The Beat Generation.
Absolutely.
And Kerouac based the character Dean Moriarty in On the Road on Neil Cassidy. In the mid-60s, he became an icon of the hippie generation and drove Ken Kesey's Magic Bus, which was the centre of the LSD culture, out of which blossomed the Summer of Love. Our final round is called Don't Give Up the Day Job. Many people throughout history have paid the rent with one job while gaining fame with another. All our panellists have to do is identify some well-known figures from their second jobs. Francis, this Staffordshire-born man left school at the age of 12 and was a carpenter until he discovered a way of making grand architecture without any physical form. Who is it? Think Gothic. Think music and Gothic.
Music and Gothic? Oh, because I was about to say Pugin. The poor man went completely bonkers in the end.
No, Pugin would have been a very good answer, but it wouldn't have been the answer to this question. Such a difficult question, I'll help you. He's a composer.
Give up.
It was the composer Havergal Brian who came to music at the late age of 23, but then made up for lost time by writing 5 operas and 32 symphonies, including the Gothic Symphony. That's what I was looking for. It only required an orchestra of 180 and 4 choirs to perform it, and it sounds like this. Now, Amanda, this woman was a famous actress and comedian in the London Theatre in the 1600s, but historically she's remembered for a part-time job she had...
Mel Gwynn.
Very good. Excellent. Tell me more about her.
Oh, well, she's marvellous. For her, we can thank having the Royal Hospital in Chelsea, looking after the pensioners, the retired soldiers. And she was a dab hand with oranges, I'm told.
Also, you drive over her grave when you go to Charing Cross Station because they took the churchyard away from St Martin's in the Field where she's buried, so you go over her grave. But the best story about her is the one where she turned up with yet another illegitimate child for Charles II, and she's supposed to have dangled him upside down over the balcony, and she said, "Charlie, a title or I drop the kid." He went, "Please, somebody catch the Duke of St Albans."
Maria, it's your turn now. How did a 17th century lens grinder from Amsterdam help us all to see more clearly? Think about it sort of metaphysically.
In the 17th century.
Well, the name actually sounds more Spanish than Dutch.
Spinoza?
Yes.
We think it's Spinoza.
It is. Very good.
I know.
I think Fred did actually whisper that.
Yes.
Did he?
I didn't hear it this time.
That's all right. Have it on us.
It's
we're
all
going down a swanny in a boat.
We're losing
bottom.
Anyway.
It was the philosopher Benedictus de Spinoza. He was unable to make a living from philosophy and therefore turned to lens grinding to earn a crust. Unfortunately, the fine dust from the glass seems likely to have caused him to contract consumption, from which he died before his most famous book, The Ethics, could be published. And a final question to you, Fred. This man was the junior Wimbledon tennis champion before giving the game up to become an orthopedic surgeon. But his fame lies with neither of those achievements. Who can it be?
Junior Wimbledon.
Don't get thrown by tennis because he excelled at a different sport entirely. His practice was in Bridgend.
It wasn't J.P.R. Williams, was it?
It was J.P.R. Williams. It is the Welsh rugby legend J.P.R. Williams. Renowned for his hard tackling and never-say-die attitude, he was an essential part of the Welsh rugby team of the 1970s, if only because it's always handy to have a surgeon on the pitch. And that brings us to the end of the show. A look at the scores tells me that Fred and Maria, I'm afraid, have only amassed 15 points, but Francis and Amanda, I have to use the word, have trounced them with 30 points. So that just leaves me to thank our panellists, Francis, Fred, Amanda and Maria. Who Goes There was written by Nick Hildred and Hugh Rycroft, and it was produced by Liz Anstey. From me, Martin Young, and all of us here at the BBC Radio Theatre, goodbye.